The meeting was called a performance review. In the company's official HR language, a performance review was a structured conversation between a manager and a direct report in which the employee's contributions over the previous year were evaluated, documented, and discussed with input from both parties. The document she was handed at the meeting had been finalized 11 days earlier. She did not know this when she sat down. She did not know it during the 40-minute conversation, during which her manager walked through the document section by section, describing each criticism as the product of a year of careful observation. She did not know it when she signed the acknowledgement form at the bottom, the signature that confirmed she had reviewed the document, not that she agreed with its contents. She found out 4 days later, when she opened the file on the shared drive to download her own copy, right-clicked on the document properties, and looked at the metadata, created March 4th. Her review meeting had been March 15th. She spent approximately 30 minutes trying to find an explanation that made the date make sense. This is not an unusual response. Before a person concludes that something deliberate and dishonest has occurred in a professional setting, most people will exhaust the innocent explanations first. It's not naivety. It's the reasonable behavior of someone who has invested 4 years in a professional relationship and is not eager to arrive at the conclusion that the relationship has been operating in bad faith. Maybe her manager had created a template on March 4th and filled in the actual content later. But the modified date on the file was also March 4th. The document had been created, completed, and not touched since 11 days before the meeting in which it was presented to her as the result of a year of evaluation. She had been rated a 3 out of 5 on Demonstrates Initiative. The review noted that she had shown limited independent problem solving in the second and third quarters. In September, she had redesigned the client onboarding workflow that her team had been using for 3 years without being asked to, because she had identified that it was causing a recurring issue in client retention. The redesign had been implemented across the department. Her manager had sent an email praising the redesign to her skip-level manager. That email was dated October 11th. A document dated March 4th could not contain an accurate assessment of her Q3 initiative. A document dated March 4th could not accurately describe her problem solving in September. The document was either a draft that had been left accidentally dated at its creation, or it was a completed evaluation written before any evaluation had taken place. The October 11th email was the moment when her understanding of the year shifted. She had read that email when she first received it and experienced it as straightforward, positive feedback. She had not been thinking about it as evidence. She had not been thinking, in October, about what kind of documentation she might need in March. Nobody does. That is one of the consistent features of this kind of workplace situation. The evidence that matters most is the evidence that was created before the problem was visible. She started looking at the emails. The piece of the puzzle she hadn't looked at carefully before was the one that didn't seem significant. A brief calendar invitation her manager had sent her on March 7th. The invitation was for the performance review meeting, dated March 15th. It was an ordinary calendar invite. Title, time, participants, no agenda attached. But the description field of the calendar invite said, "Review attached for your advance reading." Nothing was attached. She had received the invite and accepted it, and not thought twice about the missing attachment, which was exactly the response the invite was designed to produce. The attachment wasn't there because it didn't need to be. The invite needed to exist. It needed to establish that she had been given advance notice of the review. Whether she could actually read the review in advance was secondary. There is also a secondary implication in the calendar invite that matters. The description said review attached for your advance reading. In many organizations, giving an employee advance access to their performance review before the meeting is considered a best practice. It reduces the emotional shock of criticism, allows the employee to prepare questions, and often results in a more productive conversation. Some HR handbooks specifically require advance distribution. If she had been given the review in advance, and if she had read it and raised concerns before the meeting, she would have raised those concerns 11 days earlier than the meeting. The concerns would be on record. The early date would have needed an explanation at a point when the document was still theoretically in draft. She would have had much more leverage. She did not get the review in advance because the attachment was missing from the invite. And she did not follow up on the missing attachment because the invite did not indicate that the attachment was important or urgent. It said the review was attached, not that reviewing it before the meeting was required. The invite was designed, whether deliberately or accidentally, to create the record that she had been notified while ensuring that she did not actually engage with the document before the meeting. The question that changes the shape of everything when you look at a performance review situation like this is not why the document was written early. It is what the early date reveals about the purpose of the meeting. A performance review meeting, in most corporate HR frameworks, is structured as a two-way evaluation. There are often sections for the employee's self-assessment, which is submitted before the meeting and considered when writing the review. There are often sections for manager observations that are specifically intended to be completed during or after a discussion with the employee. When the final document is completed 11 days before the meeting is not a performance evaluation. The meeting is a delivery mechanism for a decision already made. She did not go to HR immediately. This is worth noting, because the assumption from outside a situation like this is that the clear thing to do is report it. In a straightforward situation where the misconduct is clear and the institutional response is predictable, that may be correct. In a corporate HR situation where the misconduct is subtle, where the person involved is a manager with institutional standing, and where the outcome of an HR investigation depends heavily on documentation she had not yet assembled, going immediately is often the wrong move. HR is not an adversarial body in the way that a court or a labor board is. HR is a function of the employer. In most organizations, its mandate is to protect the company from legal and reputational liability. When HR investigates a complaint against a manager, it is evaluating whether the manager's conduct creates exposure for the company. A complaint that arrives with strong documentation, specific dates, and clear evidence of policy violations creates more exposure than a complaint that arrives with a feeling and a question. She understood this, not from legal training, but from having watched colleagues bring complaints to HR and leave those conversations feeling unheard. She wanted to arrive with something harder to dismiss than her interpretation of a date. She spent 2 weeks building the documentation she had not known she needed to build. Documentation work in corporate environments is often discussed as though it is a form of protection. What's less discussed is the cognitive cost of doing it correctly. She was pulling emails and compiling timelines while simultaneously attending the same meetings, hitting the same deadlines, and behaving with the same professional caliber she had always maintained, because she understood that the moment her work output or engagement visibly dropped, the documented criticism in the review would appear to be accurate. She was building her defense inside the prosecution. She had to perform well enough that nothing in the review could be newly substantiated while she was challenging the review. She pulled every email exchange with her manager over the past year that related to projects she had led. She pulled the client retention data from the quarters covered in the review. She pulled the email thread in which her manager had praised her workflow redesign to the skip-level manager. She compiled them in a folder. She did not send them to anyone. She treated them as evidence in a case that had not yet been filed, because she understood that if she was right about what the date on that document meant, the case would eventually need to be filed. There is a specific skill required in a corporate environment that no job description lists. The ability to simultaneously perform your function as though nothing is wrong, while building the case that proves something is wrong. It requires you to hold two versions of your professional reality at the same time. The visible one, in which you are a productive and engaged employee, and the documented one, in which you are tracking the gap between what your employer says about you and what the record shows you actually did. She learned this skill in 2 weeks. She didn't want to learn it. The HR meeting happened 6 weeks after she found the date. She did not lead with the date. She led with the self-assessment she had submitted before the review meeting, which contained specific documentation of the projects the review claimed she had underperformed on. She asked for clarification on how the limited initiative rating had been determined in light of the workflow redesign project. She presented the email in which her manager had praised the redesign to senior management. Her manager was in the room. His expression was the expression of someone who had not expected the meeting to go this way. HR said they would investigate. She is still at the company. I'm telling you this not as a resolution, but as a description of the reality. She stayed because leaving would have meant leaving on terms that the performance review defined, and she wasn't willing to let that document be the last word on who she was at that company. She made a decision to contest it from within rather than exit and dispute it from outside, and she understood that decision carried its own risks. The performance improvement plan that the review's language was clearly pointing toward was never issued. She believes that is connected to what she brought to HR. She cannot prove that either. The institutional response to what she presented was an investigation that concluded in language she describes as deliberately non-committal, the kind of outcome language that says enough was found to warrant a change without saying what was found or acknowledging that anything was wrong. Corporate institutions do not typically admit to what was done to a single employee in a private document if they can instead quietly reassign a manager and let the record remain ambiguous. 2 years later, the manager is no longer her manager. Whether that is connected to what she brought to HR is something she suspects but cannot confirm. Performance reviews in the HR framework that governs most corporate environments carry specific legal and contractual weight. They are used to justify salary decisions, promotion decisions, and terminations. A review written before the evaluation process it claims to document is not a performance evaluation. It is a predetermined narrative presented in an evaluation-shaped container. That distinction matters legally, and it matters practically, and it matters for everyone who has ever signed a performance review acknowledgement form without understanding that the date on the document is a piece of evidence about the document's own integrity. The date on that document was March 4th. The meeting was March 15th. The distance between those two dates is 11 days, and the entire difference between an evaluation and a verdict. Was she right to stay and fight? Or does staying inside a system that treated you this way mean you're still inside a system that will do it again?